Good morning, afternoon, or evening. Welcome to the Mr. Irrelevant podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Mottram, and joining me during this NFL 2020 draft week to talk about what the Redskins are going to do, it's the Devin Thomas to my Malcolm Kelly, Matt Turrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie. That's the greatest description of the both of us that you've come up with yet.
And as you heard before we pressed record, I couldn't remember the names of Devin Thomas and Malcolm Kelly, two Redskins second round picks in 2008 that I couldn't even remember the name of.
I think I would have remembered them both, I think, but you never know. And who was the third pass catcher drafted alongside them?
That's the one I remembered. It was Fred Davis.
Right.
Because the Redskins took three receivers in the second round of that draft, and none of them were Jordy Nelson or DeSean Jackson, who were also drafted in that round.
Well, I mean, that's not great. Hopefully they'll do better this year. But at least those guys had successful, you know, careers as Redskins, right?
Whew. I think Fred Thomas had like flashes, maybe. There was like a moment where you were like, oh, this could be interesting with Cooley. But yeah, out of the three, that was it.
It was things have not been great. But convince me, are things going to be better now, Jamie? Tell me.
Well, I mean, we have the second overall pick. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
I don't know how you want to talk about this draft. I mean, I hesitate to call it a preview. We're completely unprepared, and I haven't studied up on it at all. I mean, where do you want to begin?
Well, you said that you had some takes, and I'm excited to hear what kind of takes you've got ready to throw out.
Okay, so the hottest take, and it's pretty mild, but I'm surprised to find myself saying this. The Redskins should draft Tua.
Really? Okay, convince me, because I don't agree at all.
Okay, well, I guess it's a simple question, and it kind of just, as soon as I thought of it this way, I couldn't really get my mind reoriented to think any other way. But if you could just have one quarterback right now, and the only two choices were Tua and Haskins, which one would you take?
Well, I would probably roll the dice on Tua, absent all other considerations.
Probably.
So there's two reasons I say probably. And the first is the injury concerns for Tua are really, really deeply concerning, and would be under the best of circumstances, given that nobody can do an independent medical check that we know of. They're even more concerning. And like everybody keeps saying, it's not just the most recent hip injury. It's the sort of series of ankle and foot and whatever other injuries he had over the years. So that concern gives me a little pause. And I do still think Dwayne Haskins could be good. I don't think his ceiling is as high as Tua's, but I'm not convinced he's done. But okay, tell me how you're thinking about this.
Well, I agree with everything you just said. But at the same time, Tua, the consensus on him is that he's going to go top five, top six. Like, you know, he could go three. He's probably not going to slide past, like, the top of the draft.
Agreed.
Haskins, if he were to re-enter the draft this year, would go where? Mid first at the highest?
At the highest, I think people would put him ahead of, I think they would probably put him third behind Burrow and Tua, I think.
Oh, somebody would still be talking themselves into Herbert in this equation.
Yeah, well, definitely.
But I guess that's the thing. I just boil it down. Tua is, I mean, just, I don't even know how to qualify this. I don't know if it's a quantitative analysis, if it's, I don't know, I'm just saying it, but it feels like there's not much of an argument that, all things considered, Tua is the better quarterback prospect than Haskins.
Agreed. But that's not.
So why wouldn't you take him? It's the most, obviously the most important position. It goes without saying.
Because that's not what you're weighing. You already have Haskins. Okay. Sunk funds are sunk on that. And what you're talking about is, would you rather have Haskins and either Chase Young, or if you want to argue for a hypothetical trade down, Haskins and a package of other guys, or just Tua?
I guess what I'm saying is I would rather improve my chances at having a star quarterback than Chase Young.
this is why Haskins is so frustrating, if you're looking at it from the negative side, because he was not good enough to thrill us and make us excited that we have the quarterback, but he also was not bad enough to make us, you know, certain that there's nothing there. For me, I have enough hope left in Haskins that I would rather add something. Now, to be honest, my preference in a vacuum is to trade down while keeping a pick within the top five. If you can do that.
I'm not ready to go to option two. I'm not ready to go to option two yet.
So the point is, either way, I would rather say I already invested this draft capital in Haskins. I'm not convinced that he's a total waste. I want to add to him rather than basically making last year's first round pick of him a wash and starting over.
Well, last year was a wash. just overall. last year just might as well have not happened, other than now we have the number two pick in the draft. Isn't that wonderful? Everything you said about Haskins is true. I'm not giving up on Haskins. I'm just saying I would rather improve the Redskins' chances by taking Tua and trading Haskins, which maybe you get a second rounder, I don't know, whatever, to pull the Cardinals with Josh Rosen, or keep them both. If you look at draft history, there's like a 50% chance that a quarterback taken in the first round is not going to wash out. It's basically a 50-50. I think that changes if you look at, you know, number one overall versus number 20 or whatever. But overall, like last 20 years, you look at all the quarterbacks that are taken, it's pretty much 50-50 if they're gonna turn out okay or wash out. So you could just keep both.
I don't think I could do it. I don't, on top of everything else, the injuries is just not an insignificant concern for me. The RG3 experience is too fresh. I don't know. This is one that it'll be really easy to see myself regretting, but I don't know, man. Right. I can't get on board.
Say draft Tua so that when he ends up being left-handed Drew Brees, you know, 5 years, I'll say, see, I have the receipts. I said draft Tua. But yeah, it does feel like a hot take. I get that part. I don't know. I just can't get past the notion of the Redskins having the opportunity to upgrade a quarterback and saying, no, we might have a quarterback. We're not sure. We might have one. So we're going to take the edge rusher that is the, you know, sure shot guy.
I think part of the problem is this, and a friend said this to me the other day. I think fan and observer and follower and whatever else. I think I have real trouble understanding the concept of a superstar because it has been so long since we've had a true superstar here. I mean, you could argue RG3's rookie year up until it went spectacularly off the rails. Before that, I think you're really talking about like what Sean Taylor probably, right? I mean, how many superstars have the Redskins had in our lifetime?
Well, I'll tell you this. The last All-Pro is Matt Turk in 1996.
Haven't they had a second teamer since then, at least?
I would hope so. I hope so, Trent too. Williams was like a second team at one point.
Yeah. London Fletcher, somebody. Yeah. But none of
those, but I don't know, Art Monk, Daryl Green, there's not that many.
And even the guys you just listed, as superstars go, they were sort of quiet superstars. I don't know how many people outside of Washington would call Art Monk a superstar.
Well, I'd have a problem with each and every one. He's like a glorified Al Toon.
Well, do you consider Al Toon a superstar?
I did in 1986.
Okay, yeah, agreed. I don't know. My point is, like, I think when you say Tua, I picture best case scenario being RG3. That is an incandescent talent who is going to like go off the rails because of injury or something. And when people say that, you know, Chase Young is this like just dominating pass rusher, I don't really picture Lawrence Taylor. I'm picturing like, I don't know, Von Miller, maybe somebody who's really good, who may very well be going to the Hall of Fame, but not somebody where I, as you know, when our team was playing against the Broncos, was like, God, how are they going to, you know, what are they going to do about Von Miller? You know,
right? Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time too. Like, you know, you see this draft grade is higher than, you know, Khalil Mack or Joey Bosa or who are all these guys, But all I'm thinking when I see him is like all the Redskins guys that we were supposed to be excited about, like in recent history, Montez Sweat, John Allen, Daron Payne, and the impact just hasn't been there.
Yeah, and I think we don't have the framework to wrap our heads around the concept of a true superstar. Like, if he comes in and he's Bosa or you know, Khalil Mack, even that, I feel like, would be disappointing based on the level of hype they've put forward. If he comes in and he's Lawrence Taylor, that's something else entirely.
Well, that'd be fun. I still think I'd rather have them trade down.
I agree. How far down are you willing to go? What do you need to see to make that trade worthwhile?
I don't know enough about the draft to really get into the particulars. I think just in broad strokes, if they traded down and got like another blue chip defensive player in like the top 10 and also another couple, like, you know, whatever top 60 picks, I'd prefer that. But that's more about just my very general, like, dumb draft strategy thinking of, like, you know, taking more shots is better than fewer.
Yeah, when we first started talking about this last week, my answer to everything was just, I want more picks. Like, I was ready to give Trent Williams up for like 2/5 just to get two guys instead of one dissatisfied guy. I was ready to trade back for literally anything that somebody was offering for the second, as long as it included a second rounder and obviously a replacement first rounder and something else just to get more guys. I'm no longer quite there. Now I would only move back from 2 if they can stay in this top 5 or 6, maybe.
Right. Like if they got like whoever, like who's the corner, like Okuda. I mean, I don't know. He might go 3rd in the draft, but you know, another top defensive guy, Isaiah Simmons, somebody like that, then add another pick or, you know, another asset on top of that. Or 2 assets on top of that. Yeah, I'd probably take that.
Yeah, I mean, especially for me, even if you only got 2 first rounders, you know, so say it's at that point, you're pretty much talking about Miami. You're talking about dropping down to 5 and getting whatever their other one is. I think it's 18. And if I can just do that, I feel like you get Okuda or Simmons, or worst case scenario, you get an offensive tackle. And You know, down at, maybe it's not 18. What would it be? It's something. I'm scrolling frantically now. Oh, maybe it is 18. Yeah, it is 18. I was right the first time. And at 18, if you can get those 2 picks for 2, you're looking at one of the wide receivers and a defensive player. And I kind of think that the impact on the team is greater than just one player, unless, and now we're back to this superstar thing, unless it's Lawrence Taylor.
I'm going to try to see where, is there anything else we should care about with this draft beyond what happens at number 2?
Well,
or what they do with number 2?
Well, I mean, yeah, the question is, how badly do you want them to get back into the second round? How much do you, you know, are you willing? The other question that I think is, so that they've got, I think it's the 3rd pick in the 3rd round. I think it's one of those things where it's not the 2nd for some reason. I could be wrong. Anyway, you know, it's the 2nd pick in the 2nd round or 3rd round. So they've got the 2nd pick in the 3rd round, which is going to be a pretty desirable pick.
Basically a first rounder.
Yeah, more or less. Are you going to be willing to give that up to move, you know, pick up more picks in the 4th or whatever? I think the strategy here will be interesting. Maybe it won't be. Who knows?
I saw something yesterday that I thought was kind of a wild quote from Scott McLuhan, that if Trent Williams were in this draft today at his current age, which is like 46, he would still be the first tackle selected.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw, I think it was Josina Anderson or somebody had reports that players were telling her the same thing, that when the, you know, when asked, you know, which of these young offensive linemen do you want, they said Trent Williams, which is weird because it's very rare that people outside of Redskins, you know, fandom and the team value a player higher than the people inside, you know.
And for a little context, like, I didn't know who the top like tackles were in this draft, but there's 2 guys projected in the top 10.
Yeah.
Jedrick Wills Jr. from Bama and Mekhi Becton from Louisville. anyway, I that just made me question like the whole the last like several years of Scott McClellan appreciation and fandom that I personally have taken part in, and made me question things. You know, like this was the guy that drafted Josh Doctson in the first round and Sue Cravens in the second. Maybe there's some questionable judgment at play there with him.
Yeah, his draft doesn't look great in hindsight. It's not just those two guys. I don't know. It's again, but it's just, it's when somebody comes in and we think they're going to be good, we decide that they're going to be good. And we, you know,
well, make and them when good. Their name's not Vinny Strato or Bruce Allen, like who's the guy now? Kyle Smith.
Yeah.
Along with Ron. Yeah. Like I see Kyle. I don't know anything about Kyle Smith. I'm just going to be honest with you. I really shouldn't be hosting a Redskins podcast, obviously. But I just see that name and it's not Bruce Allen or Vinny Serato. And I'm thrilled. Like I've trust in his judgment. I'm there with him.
Plus his name's Kyle. And like, yeah. We lost out on one Kyle and now we've got a different Kyle, you know,
and I keep confusing with Kyle Allen.
Oh yeah. We've got two new Kyles. I forgot about that. Do you put any credit in the idea that that guy might start?
No. Cause I don't know. I guess it's reasonable to speculate given how up and down Haskins' rookie season was and that Allen has a relationship, experience, familiarity with Rivera, but it also seemed like he was kind of shitty, like very turnover prone. He seems like a classic, like safe backup guy.
Yeah, I agree. And if that's what he is, then I love that they got him and it's very exciting. The idea that the whatever it was 15th overall pick from last year or whatever Haskins was may have to compete with that guy is a bad sign for everybody involved and sort of bolsters your argument that they should just take Tua and be done with it.
Let's go back to that for a second. If Tua was healthy or like you felt more confident in his, you know, injury proneness or lack thereof, would you be on board with the draft Tua plan?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's more about the quality of the prospect, not the idea that, like, if you can upgrade a quarterback, you should.
Yeah, I mean, because I think we all saw it work out for the Cardinals last year, who, you know, in some ways it really it takes guts to just cut bait that quickly on a guy you spent that high of a pick on. So, I would be fine with it. I just don't think this situation lends itself to it. I mean, maybe a better thought experiment would be if if Burrow drops to second somehow, they take Chase Young or whatever.
Should bring Burrow in to compete with Haskins just to get back for what happened at Ohio State where Haskins beat Burrow out for the job.
The narrative would just be so delightful. I mean, what do you think your value is on Haskins if you don't want to have that competition and you draft a quarterback at two? Do you think you can get a second or third round pick for Haskins?
I think so. I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's like a little bit of stink on him now that wasn't there a year ago. Yeah. And not just because of him, but just, you know, because of the situation and being, you know, in D.C. It's kind of like Rosen. You know, it's like you didn't necessarily diminish Rosen as a prospect, but his rookie year was so rough in Arizona, he couldn't help but be devalued. I feel like that's kind of the case with Haskins.
Agreed. I think.
By the way, you know that Haskins is still a year younger than Burrow.
I did not know that. Do you think he's younger than us?
I could be his father.
Are you?
No, I'm not. Similar arm strength, but no. Actually, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, and Dwayne Haskins are all still a year younger than Joe Burrow.
Wow, what a waste of a draft pick on an old man like that. That's going to be crazy. Maybe that's why they'll pass on him and he'll fall to second.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of weird. I mean, you know, whatever. He just turned, actually, he's turning 23. Haskins just turned 23. I mean, you'd hope that he would develop. You'd hope there's still a lot of room to grow. And maybe with Burrow, he kind of is what he is. But, you know, he was so good at LSU, like historically greatest season ever. If he slipped, I think he'd be kind of foolish not to take a guy who seems to be a pretty sure shot quality NFL quarterback.
I agree. But I think we're both wildly speculating here. So let me ask you the question in this way. What, at the end of all 3 days of the draft, you know, what mm-hmm. does your ideal situation look like? You can be as specific or as general as you want. You can say, well, they just got a bunch of guys, or well, they got, you know, a quarterback or whatever. What, and include Trent Williams, include all those sort of moving parts. What will make you happy and optimistic after the whole thing is over?
I think I'm going to be happy no matter what, which is, you know, nice when you've got the second pick in the draft and there are what I think are, you know, two franchise quarterbacks as well as one like absolute blue chip stud defensive player. I think I'm going to be happy no matter what. If they do the likely thing and just draft Chase Young, I'd be happy with that. If they draft Tua, I'd be happy and thrilled. I'd be like super excited. And if they traded down, I think that would be like the smart thing to do, even though it might not be as exciting. And with Trent, I feel like as long as they got something that was like in the first three rounds for him, it's a win. And hopefully that happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think my ideal scenario is that they wind up with Simmons and an extra first rounder. I think that's my sort of my top choice. I'll be fine with Young. I would like to see them get into the second round somehow, ideally by getting rid of Trent Williams. But yeah, I don't know, man. Here's the thing that I keep thinking about is I agree with you that I'm going to be happy no matter what, because it's the draft. The whole point of the draft is to, you know, create hope and give you this sort of start the momentum into the league year. My problem is I'm not convinced there's going to be any football games, and that is going to be a real downer when that's all we have left to start thinking about.
Yeah, I know. This is kind of the last, well, I guess you've got the Last Dance happening every Sunday night. That's kind of a sports thing.
Oddly,
but this is like the last.
I'm oddly thing. Like not interested in the Last Dance. And I don't say that to be contrarian. I kind of wish I was interested. Everybody seems super happy about it. And I wish I was able to join in the chatter, but I just don't care. I don't know why.
I mean, do you like basketball? Well,
yeah,
maybe that's it.
I assume that puts a damper on it. But I would, if you had asked me in the abstract if I liked basketball, I would have been like, yeah, you know, whatever. I watch the Wizards. I watch Terps. I'm, you know, happy. But like, I just don't need another 10 hours on Michael Jordan. I feel like Michael Jordan has taken up an alarming amount of time in my life for somebody that is not on a team that I root for, does not play the sport that I, you know, focus on the most, and is generally just not actually in my life. I just don't need to think about Michael Jordan for 10 more hours.
I don't know. I mean, it's a cool mix of things, like high production values. You know what I mean? It's like the upper echelon of like sports documentary quality. And it's this era, like the whole thing is basically set between, you know, 1982 and 1998. You know, like, so the era, it's just very evocative of like my youth and young manhood. And then Jordan himself, it kind of takes me back to being a kid because I just idolized him, and I would watch like VHS, like highlight tapes that NBA Entertainment would put out. And it just takes me back to that, but done so well, you know, with like a 2020 approach. Like when they were showing Jordan as like, I guess it was like his third year, when he comes back from injury and he's got the 8-seeded Bulls against the 1-seeded, like one of the greatest teams of all time, Celtics, and like single-handedly almost beats them. He scores 63 on them in a game, the all-time playoff record. The that montage with like era appropriate rap music playing, like it was so much adrenaline. It was awesome. It was just really, 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 really good. But then it's mixed with this like modern day Jordan that keeps providing commentary, like sitting in, I don't know, his living room. I'm not sure where he is with, I don't know what type of brown liquor. I've heard it's tequila, but let's just say it's scotch or bourbon, like a glass of brown liquor and a cigar at all times. And just, you know, laughing, slapping his knee, talking some shit. Seems a little loose given the platform mm-hmm. that he's on. it's fantastic. I really enjoyed it. And I don't know, maybe it's because of all the things I said, my age, my interests.
Force myself to try to watch it, because I mean, you sound, I want to share your enthusiasm. You know, sometimes people are enthusiastic and you're like, it's okay. You want to poke a hole in that. Like, I don't feel that way. I am jealous of your enthusiasm. Maybe I'll give it a shot. I don't know. But to the question that set all this off, if I said over under number of regular season NFL games that each team plays, and I set the over under at 9.5, which way do you go?
Over.
I think it's going to be under. I really do. Everybody I've asked this question of, which has just been like people on the street, I just stop people and ask mm-hmm. them from yeah. 6 feet away.
Like first of all,
and but everybody that I've asked says it takes the over. Most people say the NFL will find a way that they're going to have all their games, and I just I know that's what they think, and I know that's what they believe right now. But I don't know. I can't imagine going to a sporting event. I can't imagine if I were, you know, if I had a kid on a football team being excited that he was playing in a sporting event. I don't know, man.
No, I'm with you. And I think that's right about like the NFL will find a way. I think there's gonna be a lot of trial and error and like openings and closings, you know, grand opening, grand closing. But it's April, you know, like I feel like we might be able to figure out how to have sports again 5 months from now, 4 months from now, I guess would be, you know, more appropriate with NFL. I don't know. If I had to bet on if there's going to be an NFL regular season, which is what you're asking me right now, I would bet on yes, but it's not like with a lot.
I think there will be one. I think it's going to be shortened. I think, which actually brings us around to the Jordan thing, because somebody was asking on Twitter, what would you like to see be given the Last Dance treatment? And my answer was the strike shortened 87 football season, but I want it from the beginning. I want the whole preseason. I want the start of the season, then the replacement players part, and then the Redskins run to the playoffs, all the Doug Williams stuff. And so I've been thinking about Jordan.
I want the replacement Redskins to beat the regular Cowboys.
In high production value with era appropriate, I don't know, mediocre radio rock playing. It'll be great.
That would be great. God. I feel like, I mean, that's my favorite team of all time as a Redskins fan, you know, and just a sports fan. And that Super Bowl is my favorite game ever played. But the replacement aspect and Doug Williams, you know, being like the first black quarterback aspect, I think it could play.
And I think that especially if they wind up having to make a decision this season, I mean, obviously they wouldn't have time to get this imaginary project into production in time, but I think having people discuss just the decision of, are we going to bring in players and are we going to, you know, all that stuff. I really think that behind the scenes would inform the current situation, be interesting in context. I don't know.
Do you think they could actually, you know, I was going to make the joke. Do you think they could get Timmy Smith? But did he die? I feel like Timmy Smith might not be.
Well, he's definitely not with me right now. I can say that for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess part of my thing, by the way, and just belief that there will be football is I think there will be trial and error with like other sports by the time the fall rolls around. So that even if people aren't willing to gather, they will have figured out how to like stage events. Like stage, you know, the athletes to play, but
I don't know, man. I guess if Maryland can buy a whole bunch of tests from South Korea, the NFL probably makes more money than the entire state of Maryland. So maybe they can figure out a way to institute a robust testing program. I have no idea, but the whole point of all this is that I think the draft is going to end, and the reality that these are the questions that we've got now is going to hit us, and I think it's going to suck.
I have another lukewarm take for you. I don't miss sports.
Interesting. I feel similarly, but let me hear your version of it.
Okay, my version of it, even though like not having sports directly impacts my business at Breaking Tea, which by the way, I did like a How We Built This sort of podcast thing with the JMU Sports blog podcast. So if anybody's out there interested in about Breaking Tea, in my day job. Go check out the Jamie Sports Blog podcast. So anyway, even though it's contrary to my business interests, having no sports is wonderful because now I enjoy the weekends. Like, I look forward to the weekends. I just enjoy them as like a person and a, you know, a husband and father and friend, whatever. Normally, and for my entire professional existence, like, the weekends are filled with sports, and therefore I'm either working or like filled with a sense of obligation that I need to like know what's happening and be doing something about it. And now I don't. And I just fucking love the weekend. I'm just like doing stuff in my garage, taking a nap, like reading a book, whatever, you know, going on bike rides with my kids. And part of it's like, you know, coronavirus, that's just what people are doing now. But like, I feel like I have permission to do those things because there's no sports going on. And the like release of that obligation outweighs the like whatever joy I get from watching sports as a fan.
Yeah, my version of that part, which I, because I agree with everything you said, my version of that is in the evenings, my habit was always just to flip on whatever sporting event was on, kind of have it on in the background, which wasn't a huge deal, but it precluded, you know, family movie night or anything like that. Whereas now with no sports, we all watch stuff together. So that's kind of cool. The one thing that I do miss is not sports that I care about. It's the sports that I don't. It is that just having stuff on in the background. It is having like storylines unfold in something and news that is interesting, but not like apocalyptic and weird. I
do miss having some stuff to like read about.
Lauren Tyson wrote a really good piece on this over at whatever they're calling it. Was it the temporary unnamed temporary sports blog or whatever the non-undead Deadspin is called? She did a real good piece that I thought articulated this much better than I had been able to previously. But it's like, it gives you something to talk about with people. It gives you, there's just a lot of things that background sports does that I do miss, but I don't miss foreground sports at all. I don't, you know, whatever. I couldn't care less. I mean,
yeah, I do. I do miss like the, just like having the Nats game on, like just random, you know, just in the background. I miss my wife telling me to turn the TV off when it's dinner time, even though I'm not really watching, but I still want it on.
I miss the TV just being on, you know, ESPN or TNT or whatever the next morning, because that's where it was. You know, I don't know. There's things like that that I miss, but I agree with you. What I wonder is how much of that will stick after sports do come back. Are you going to go back to your work routine and realize that you hate it?
I don't know. I, you know, I mean, that's what the money's for. So it doesn't really matter.
Fair point. And may I say that you all have done a tremendous job of pivoting in the current situation. I'm quite impressed. I myself have purchased but not yet received the what is it, the social distancing champion shirt, which I feel like was made for me.
Yes.
I really am. For this. Do you know how many Zoom calls I've had with friends? Correct.
Zero. I do think that behavior slowing down. Everybody was like out of the gates, like, I'm Zooming with friends. This is so great, catching up with people that I never used to, you know, hang out with. And now I don't.
Yeah, I feel kind of bad because, like, I think I was coming off as a much bigger asshole than I meant to. But, you know, we had a group of friends in the neighborhood and the couples we see off and stuff. And they kept being like, oh, my God, you know, we should Zoom. We miss you. We should do this. And I'm like, I would have seen you once in the lab. Like, it hasn't been that long. You know, I'm OK. I'm fine not yelling at my computer, because that's what I do most days anyway. I work from home in my day job and have always been on teleconferences and whatever you want to call them. And the last thing I want to do when my day is done is sit there and stare at somebody else on the screen and be like, I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Like, it's just, I'm not interested. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah. I was real curmudgeonly about it. I think I came off badly. I feel bad about that, but, you know, I think I earned my 2020 social distancing champion shirt.
I am a big fan of the like neighborhood, like driveway thing, like, you know, physically distanced, like cocktails with friends. Although it's kind of fucked up because it's like, we'll do that with like another couple or two couples that have children that are friends with our children, and we won't let them play together. We're like, no, you have to stay in your home. Well, mommy and daddy go drinking.
We have been pretty, also been pretty stringent with our kids, more so than some other kids I see in the neighborhood. And I feel bad about it, but like, I don't know. The Washington Post had that thing with the bouncing dots when all this started, explaining how it worked. And the bouncing dots made a real impression on me, man. I mean, that's what kids are. They're like little bouncing dots.
Yeah. Over under on if our children are going to be in classrooms
this fall.
I don't have over under, whatever. Do you think they're going to go back to school in September?
I think they're going to have to. I mean, I don't know how you kick off. It's one thing to transition midway through. I don't know how you kick off a school year with this distance learning model. I mean, how emphatically has it been implemented for you guys?
I feel like our kids are forgetting everything they ever learned because they're just like, they get like an hour or two of assignments every day in like sporadic kind of like classroom Zooms. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think you could do it. I think everybody, I don't know how, especially public schools are not just going to be like, look, just repeat the grade again. You did not learn anything you were supposed to learn. Just do it again. I don't know, but I think they'll be back in school. I think similar to what you said about sports, I think they will have found a way. Boy, I really don't know. As I say this out loud, I don't know that I believe it.
That's the thing. Like, I feel like you can kind of take a chance with adult professional athletes like coming together and playing. Also, you're talking about a smaller number of people. So like you could be tested and, you know, whatever, traced. Whereas like, you know, millions of children across the country.
Bouncing dots, man.
Not being yeah. Like, I don't know. I have a hard time seeing that getting worked out by September. That seems to me to be a much higher bar than you know, staging football games.
Yeah, when you put it like that, I agree with you, and I'm now terrified because the time split between trying to maintain my full-time job and, you know, serve as a part-time teacher and everything else, it's a lot.
Well,
hey, you too, pal.
You're doing great.
I'm a social distancing champion.
All right. Well, I'm glad we did. Yeah. I'm glad we did this. I'm sorry to anybody out there who thought they were going to learn anything. I was somewhat proud of my Tua take. I feel like that's a logical take that I'm not seeing enough of out there, but I'm glad.
Yeah, it was fun. It was like being on one of those arguing shows, except that I actually meant what I was saying. So that was cool.
Yeah, it was like that, except now I really
except that I really don't know where you're coming from with this stupid take. It's baffling.
But, oh, by the way, we should do some sort of pop culture before we go. I'm going to give one like earnest recommendation, which is to watch Schitt's Creek, which me and my wife have watched for spent a lot of this quarantine watching that show. We binged 6 seasons worth and started slow, grew on us a lot, and ultimately was like one of the more profound and like moving shows I've ever watched. Really glad that I watched it. Knew nothing about it going in. I think we watched like an episode or two and stopped, picked it back up. But yeah, Schitt's Creek, strong.
So it's weird that you're saying it's moving. I had always heard it was like a good sort of scratch the old Arrested Development itch. Does it take a turn somewhere or something?
I mean, it's the thing. It's like moving in like a Parks and Rec or Office sort of way, but has like I think more to say, and has it gets really emotional as like the as it gets into like the later seasons, like 5, 6. But yeah, it's a half hour comedy and it's absurd, and yeah, it's kind of like Arrested. There's a lot of, you know, there's some of the same people that you might see in like, you know, Christopher Guest's comedies, like, you know, it has that sensibility. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's just I don't even want to like say too much, but I just strong advocate for it. And also I'm always like over recommending shows that like me and my wife can watch together and like both enjoy equally. Because I hate like trying to like watch something on the side. Like I've been watching Better Call Saul on the side of our relationship for like what feels like years. It's such a slog. You have to do it that way.
Well, that's how I felt about the show, regardless of who I was watching it with. So I feel you on that one. I have surprisingly little pop culture. My goal has been to sort of dig through the backlog of, you know, books and random stuff that's stored on my, all my devices, and show my kids movies that I like that I haven't gotten around to showing them. So I got nothing really. I'm still doing that Lost rewatch and still really, really enjoying it, which I know nobody believes, but I'm really digging it, even though I know where it ends, even though I know that it doesn't do some of the things we all wanted it to do. Like, it's just a well put together show. So
I'd like to go back to that, because at this point now, it's been so long that I kind of forget. I mean, it really did cast a spell on me back there in the 2000s.
Yep, in the long ago past of the aughts.
Another thing that I've been into, I think I may have told you about this at some point, but the 36 from the Vault podcast.
No, I don't think you did.
It's a podcast of Stephen Hyden and Rob Mitchum, I think, where they're the music critics. Each episode is about a different volume of the Dix Picks Grateful Dead concert series. And I'm not even that into the Grateful Dead, though now I'm pretty into the Grateful Dead. They're up through seven concerts, and each episode is like an hour and a half talking about a specific Grateful Dead concert. And I love it. And then I like go back and listen to those concerts. I'm like crafting a playlist. They even did like a one-off episode about Fish. And I had like a Fish phase maybe when I was like...
You were Fish curious.
Yeah, I was Fish curious, and like everyone had that like live Fish double album, double CD with Bouncing Around the Room on it. And so, anyway, since then, I've never really like connected with Fish on any level. Now I'm listening to Fish.
Wow.
So, like 36 from the Vault, Grateful Dead concert series podcast. And I don't know, man. I'm like way too into it.
If you picture my wheelhouse as an actual house, like this is in another solar system somewhere else. I'll give it a shot. I've liked stuff that Hyden does. I thought his Celebration Rock podcast, it was one of those ones where a really small thing irritated me enough that I wound up abandoning the whole project. But basically he would do that thing where he'd be like, hey guys, in today's episode, I'm going to talk to, you know, whoever, the lead singer of the Afghan Whigs. He did blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. All right. So now here's my interview. And then he'd be like, hey guys, I'm here with the lead singer of the Afghan Whigs.
I know what you're talking about, because I've listened to some of that. That is really annoying. He somehow avoids doing that on this. I don't know, man. I now, like, there's like a 24-minute version of Dark Star that I was listening to earlier today that, like, I could talk to you about Jamie. For a while.
Oh, man. I tried to listen. What's his name? The comedian who died young. Harris Whittles. He did a podcast where it was him and somebody. I don't even remember who was it. Scott Aukerman. I don't remember. It was someone. And he was one of them was into Fish. He was into Fish and the other guy was not. And they were trying. And like, I actually liked that because my wife was very into Fish and I was not. And so that sort of was a dynamic I liked. But then it just seemed so grim after he died to try to keep listening to that. So I abandoned it. And I don't know. Maybe I'll give this a shot. Who knows?
I will say this about the Grateful Dead podcast and listening to a lot of Dead is like, I really do want to smoke weed or just like, you know, be on weed, however people do weed these days. And I'm just not around it. And I'm around like grade school children most of the time. And I also have like a job to do every day. So, you know, there's a
heartbreaking story, you know? Man. That was really sad.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you ask the right grade school kids, they can probably score you some weed.
Hey, Johnny. You know anyone who does weed?
And while I'm on the topic, how does one do weed these days?
Well, for real, I don't know. Like, it seems like most people are eating the weed. That seems to be the, like, at least in our age group, how people...
There's a reasonably good chance that anybody who has listened to 40 minutes of us talking about this is probably stoned themselves. So maybe they can hook you up and find a way to get you that legally and safely.
I don't think anybody, like, smokes bud anymore. I don't think that's a thing that people do. I think it's either, like, they are on... Are they doing edibles or a pen situation. I don't think anybody, like, deals with actual... like marijuana buds.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, I don't know. You're yet again still outside my wheelhouse.
Well, I will say that I went into one of those dispensaries. I guess it was last mm-hmm. year. Was I in Denver last year? Yeah, I was in Denver last year. And they had just a smorgasbord. And it seemed to be that the bud was like off to the side. Like, oh, are you old? Okay, go over there. This is how you used to do it.
It's like when they would have that little tiny corner of cassette tapes in the stores after they moved to CDs. And only weird old people were there. And now there are no stores and no CDs.
Oh, God, we could do another 40 minutes on 90s music after that that 9 grade of albums.
Yeah, man, that occupied way too much of my brain. Maybe once we determine that sports really isn't coming back, we'll just make the full transition to being a nostalgia music podcast and just give it up.
I loved that 9 grade because it was, I mean, just for the listener who didn't see it, it was like 9 CDs or 9 albums. Might as well have been CDs. It was those were CDs. Nirvana Nevermind, Pearl Jam 10, Stone Temple Pilots Core, Green Day Dookie, Weezer Blue Album, Alice in Chains Dirt, Soundgarden, Super Unknown, REM Automatic for the People. Am I forgetting anything?
I don't know. I wasn't counting along, but I think you...
Oh, I did that.
Siamese Dream? Did you say Siamese Dream?
Smash Puppy, yes. Siamese Dream. And how could I forget? I think that's all of them. Like, I did that entirely from memory because I'm pretty sure those are like the 9 albums I listened to the most in 1993 or whatever year, you know, whatever like 2 year period.
So here's something I'm doing with a couple friends of mine from college. We have does as a time killer background project, we're trying to think each of us to think of a single song, a pop song that epitomizes each year of our lives, going all the way back to whatever year we were born. We're all slightly different ages, and we're tracking it, and we're sort of planning on comparing them, although some of us are moving faster than others, and it's turning out to be a much more complicated process than I would have thought. But I will send you the template for this when we're offline or off the podcast, and I think I would be interested to see what you come up with. But anyway, the goal is in the end we'll be able to put together a playlist for each of our lives and just have it ready to go. I'm actually,
is this your favorite or is it like the one that like the exemplified the culture, like is Ace of Base on there for like I Saw the Sign even if you didn't really like it?
No, it so it varies. It's that's one of the things that's interesting to look at, because like you can almost see this sort of sine wave of like, well, here's the popular music my parents were listening to when I was a kid, and now here's the most mainstream pop music on the radio, and now up here, I must have gone to college because here's a bunch of bands that nobody ever heard of. And then, so it's whatever resonates with you. So what's interesting, to bring it back to your 9 grid, is that none of those things from the 9 grid have made it onto my list, or very few of them, because I listen to them so much and they span so many years. I mean, it's a cluster of years, but it's not something I can pin to 1 year. So I'm finding that there's usually a specific thing for each year. And those things is just like, yeah, that was the whole start of the 90s kind of thing.
Well, my difficulty in that would be I'd have to like use like Wikipedia so much because I don't know what years things happened. Like I if you would ask, hey, when did Pearl Jam's first record come out? And by the way, I don't know if I can say the word Pearl Jam. Like I don't know if I am pronouncing that correctly. I've been made fun of for not being able to say Pearl Jam before.
How do people say it?
I don't know. But like I would have guessed that came out in like 1993 or something. And I looked the other day, it was 1991.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know how I got that so
wrong. Yeah, Versus, I think, was either late 92 or 93.
Maybe it took me like a year to like get hip to it. Yeah.
Thing I found is that when I do check Wikipedia, sometimes what you find yourself doing is looking at when the singles were released. Because even if what you are identifying with was the first single and it came out in 1 year, you realize, oh, I didn't hear it until after these 3 singles had been released. And then I found the album and then I found that song. And it's interesting. It's been really a weird way of thinking about both music and thinking about life. It was, I don't know. It's just weird. It's the sort of thing that I would never be doing if we weren't in lockdown, social distancing, whatever, but it's, anybody out there who wants a time killer, highly recommend this one. Go for it.
All right. I'm going to send you that 24-hour minute Dark Star. Yeah,
please do. Man. What does it go into after Dark Star? I mean,
oh, what's the transition? Because that's big too. That's really big. Actually, it's the closer. Actually, no. It's not the closer. Hold on. I'm gonna find this out because I know you're very interested in what the transition is from this Dark Star. Oh, my internet! Come on, what's going on? Is everyone at my house streaming something? I feel like an NFL GM.
Yeah, this
right
is
now.
The draft is going to be just insane.
Okay, so it's a 16-minute not fade away into a 24-minute Dark Star. So that's 40 minutes of two jams, and then it goes into a third jam, which is called the Space Jam. I'm sorry, the Spam Jam, which is not really a song so much as just like an outro of Dark Star that goes on for 7 minutes that they had to give a name to, and so that goes. It's the Spam Jam, and then a 13-minute Morning Dew. So if you have an hour to just spend with those three songs, not Fade Away, Dark Star, Morning Dew, I would recommend going to Dick's Picks Volume 7 on your streaming service.
Well, I did not, never occurred to me that all the Dick's Picks would be on the streaming service. Man, all right. I will join you on this journey, my friend.
Thanks, man. It's really good work music. So
I will do.
All right, good talking to you.